football, rugby.
Yeah, it's obviously a incredible stadium. You know, obviously hearing from the Irish people that it's very historic, and there are a lot of rugby games that are played there. And you know, obviously being fortunate enough to be one of the few rugby players to have played a game on Croke Park is very special.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
You're welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Mick McCarthy here with you in for Owen until 10 p.m. tonight. We thought the World Cup had been set alight last night by Kylian Mbappe and Erling Haaland. That was until the wee hours and a Leo Messi hat-trick put them in their shadow. Tonight, England-Croatia. I think we have a World Cup, folks. Also, tonight, it's hurling quarterfinals weekend in Thurles. Can Dublin cause another shock at this level? Richie Hogan will be in studio at 8 o'clock, where we'll also have to chat to him about the news today that it could be Henry Shefflin versus Brian Dowling for the Kilkenny job. And is there enough hype surrounding Friday night's URC final in Croke Park? Matt Williams certainly doesn't think there is. He thinks there's a level of disrespect out there towards Leinster at the moment. We'll be talking to him on Wednesday night rugby later this hour. Get in touch with us on WhatsApp 0879 180 180, or get in touch on YouTube or on social media at Off the Ball. Eve Conway is here with us for tonight's News Round. How are you, Eve?
I'm all good.
Arthur D also with us.
Hello.
And delighted to be joined by Dion Fanning tonight as well. Dion, how are things?
Good, Mick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I haven't seen enough of DR Congo versus Portugal so far tonight, which is, you know, this issue with working through a World Cup, no crack at all. João Neves scored after 6 minutes, but Johan Vissa equalised with a fine header just before halftime. DR Congo's first ever goal at a World Cup finals.
Yeah, and I think it's obviously changed the nature of that game, in that after Portugal scored, Congo were clearly just... they weren't changing. They had five at the back and they were just in a low block. They weren't going to let Portugal through, and nothing was going to change by that. Now it actually, like, nothing obviously is going to change from their approach when the second half begins, but it adds a layer of drama to it that is a kind of a test for Portugal now. And we've seen teams, you know, the first round of matches doesn't really, you know, we know that from previous. We've seen Spain lose. We've seen Argentina lose 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It doesn't, and this year especially, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. But we like to think when we're in this wave, when this kind of euphoric moment, which is the kind of first weeks of the World Cup, we like to think that it's everything is hugely significant. And after France last night, and if you think about those moments in the French game last night, Senegal having the chance just before halftime, and you wonder what France would have done then.
Yeah.
And when they came out and made a couple of changes, the positional changes, and it made all the difference. And Senegal, both teams look completely different in the second half. And it'll be interesting to see how Portugal respond now.
Yeah, they'll be chasing the game and there's a bit on the line. It'll be definitely a more interesting second half, and they'll have a 41-year-old striker up there to knock it up to, who I'm sure is going to make the runs that is needed. One man who didn't have to run last night, I've mentioned him a couple of times so far. Look, me and you are too old to be staying up for 2 o'clock in the morning games in the middle of the week. We've got stuff to do. But at the same time, I woke up and I have to say, like, I was sort of jolted out of bed by you see the scoreline. First thing you check, obviously, how did Argentina get on? Are they going to be a disaster? You know, it starts off in a negative point of view. Then you see that they win 3-0. And then you see it's like, it's Messi's name and there's like three numbers beside it. None of them are even a penalty.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, can't wait to dig into the highlights. I was just like jolted into awakeness. And it's like, I don't care how cynical we become. I don't care how even, when you look into Leo Messi's life even, you just sort of like, you know, he's not like outside of football, not that impressive a person. But it's just like, there is something about seeing the GOAT and the time of his lifespan being elongated into yet another World Cup here. It got me going today, I have to say.
Well, yeah, I would. I know what you're saying about outside of football, but I think when your life inside of football is so incredible, when you've done what Messi has done and continues to do, then it rebuts all other arguments. I mean, we know all this, you know, the stuff that, you know, like the Saudi stuff and all this kind of stuff that is. But I think, like, he's just such a phenomenon. And he is, it is so fascinating that he remains so compelling to watch in a way that you wouldn't think anyone would be compelling to watch when they're doing so little so much of the time, when they are observing for so many. And that's what makes them. It is like watching, you know, somebody in the wild who, you know, is like, you know, is the sort of the alpha, you know, the apex predator in this documentary.
Yeah.
And everybody else is just there to be sacrificed. And you just watch him moving around. And even at this age, you know that he can still do it. And I agree with you. Like, one of the things, like, World Cups are funny in the rhythms they develop. And, you know, like, the overnight matches are like, I woke up a couple of times and I checked, you know, obviously went, watched the France game, Mbappe scored twice, and saw that Haaland had scored twice in the Norway game. And then, you know, woke up again, and then you just see this ratcheting up, and there's Messi hat-trick. And it's like, you know, and then you watch it and there's just all those little moments. And again, and also the dynamic between him and the rest of the team, like, it's just unchanged. Like, he is the main man, but they all recognize what he does for them, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's something special, and we're very lucky to be living in his world, as you put it, Mick.
And it's so just great to still be so excited by it as well. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know, maybe when he's gone, we will start to, we'll find whoever it is that's next, and maybe it's going to be like a 31-year-old Kylian Mbappe or something at the next World Cup. But at the same time, like, it's like, while Messi is still there and while he's still relevant, and he's doing things like this, and he's not a shadow of himself, even though, like, physically, or, you know, in terms of his speed or whatever he might be, but what he can still do with the ball, it's just, I don't know, I just don't think we can possibly move on from it. I think, like, the most excited I think I was before the World Cup in any way was, I think Ben sent me, like, the highlights of his cameo when he came off the bench after 70 minutes against Iceland. And it was just this, oh my God, Messi is still Messi. You know, and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for this now.
Yeah, no, I do think, like, in every sense, in the context of this World Cup and in the context of his career, just enjoy it. Because even in the context of this World Cup, it could be in a couple of weeks, we might be saying, God, we got carried away about Messi in this tournament a bit too early. We don't know how Argentina are going to do. But I think in the context of what he's, you know, his career, like, it is, and there won't be anyone for a long time like him. You know, there won't be someone who comes along to fill that hole. And like, it is, he is incredible. He's just an incredible person to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. One loser from last night, Arthur, the great Miroslav Klose.
Oh,
he's a shared record now.
Oh, right.
The charts.
Why,
yeah.
Why wasn't he sent off?
Why wasn't Messi sent off?
Yeah.
Do you think that was a sending off?
Yeah. I've only seen a still, so it's hard to say. It wasn't included in the official YouTube highlights of the game.
Sure wasn't.
It's like I watched them at 6 minutes.
I saw the like, you know, one of those clips that, you know, you never know what you're getting anymore on Twitter. I saw one of those clips, you know, talking about the conspiracy, and then I watched it and I was like, yeah, it's not like a definite sending off, is it?
Very like, for people who haven't seen it, Xavi Simons doing it against Liverpool around Christmas time last year, and he did get sent off, I think. But I thought that was controversial at the time.
He went down the back of his Achilles.
Stand on the back of a calf. Was it Achilles?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. Right.
All right.
So Arthur wants the hat-trick stricken from the record.
No, I'm just...
One man who's probably in agreement with you, and he's got a hotline to the White House. And that's the man who's playing tonight. He would like...
I think Lionel Messi's been there more recently, hasn't he?
Has he? Well, I don't know.
All American champions get invited.
They don't all go, though. He kowtowed. He was happy enough to go.
Well, anyway, I think Ronaldo could still put a call in.
And the White House will then ultimately decide whether Lionel Messi can suspend
him. And we'll be happy,
because that's the kind of World Cup... Can I just... Like, we'll get to this in a sec. I'm just wondering how you feel generally about it, because... Like, it's not as if the football has been absolutely incredible. I think last night in general was really, really good. But it's still been, it's been World Cup-y, you know what I mean? It's like full stadiums, decent matches. And it like Qatar 4 years ago, it's not that you completely overlook or stop thinking about it, but you kind of just make a decision fairly early on to just kind of get on with it and enjoy the World Cup, which doesn't always reflect that well on us, but it is the way it is.
It's different to Qatar too, because we have so many cultural reference points for America. And I think one of the things that this World Cup is doing without being kind of sentimental about it is that it's reminding people that there are so many different aspects to America. And you see like, you know, Algeria and Kansas and the welcome they're getting and the way they're, you know, the stuff they've been doing in Kansas. And obviously Scotland, Scottish fans in Boston and their trip to Fenway Park. And
I was going to dry.
And, you know, drinking, you know, four times as much as they drink in a July the 4th weekend, this kind of stuff. Like amazing, amazing things that, you know, we shouldn't be, like, it reminds you of the great, that when Scotland played USSR in the World Cup in 1982, there was a banner in the crowd, communism versus alcoholism. And, you know, one of those ideologies remains vibrant.
Yeah,
today.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's all these, so you see these things and like, so they all have a kind of a resonance for us. And you know, and then there's a Mexico element, and we started in, you know, start in the Azteca and everything, you know, that is associated with that. So I think it's an easier one to park the other stuff. And it's all, and it does always happen anyway, because it is also a World Cup, and that creates its own incredible energy. Like, you know, I was saying to Arthur, like I get my son around 6:30 every morning, and our routine now is to go back through bits of the matches. But like, we woke up this morning and we were going back through like all, you know, some of the matches from last night. Then we remembered that actually Austria Jordan was on live right now. You know, we could be watching live World Cup football.
Yeah.
And like, you're going, is there any other context in which even, you know, Austria Jordan would make you stop? Hold on, stop everything. Austria Jordan is on.
Yeah, certainly not, you know, bleary eyed at 6:30 in the morning, I would imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just, that's what it does. Like, it is incredible.
Yeah, it's the best. Okay, Eve, we're going to start with the World Cup.
Yep, just a quick score update from Portugal and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's still 1-1, as it was at halftime. João Neves opening up the scoring for Portugal after 6 minutes before Vissa equalised just before halftime. The second half has got underway just a few moments ago.
Yeah, and there's better news for Bernardo Silva in the transfer market than there is in the pitch. He was booked just before halftime for a fairly rash lashing out and was taken off at halftime because of it. So his World Cup hasn't started off too well, but it's all about next season for him anyway.
It is. So Real Madrid have announced the signing of former Manchester City midfielder Bernardo Silva. He was a free agent this summer and he joins the club on a 2-year deal. Silva, who turns 32 in August, of course started for Portugal tonight at the World Cup, but is no longer on the pitch.
Is no longer on the pitch. What are you making of Real Madrid's summer, classic post-election campaign of just like loading up? They've bought basically three of a new back four, including seemingly a replacement for Alexander Arnold in Dumfries. They've bought Kanade, they've bought I've forgotten somebody as well there, and obviously now they have Bernardo Silva as well. It's and it doesn't feel like it's finished yet or anything like it, you know?
And they have a new manager,
of course. Yeah, a very old new manager.
Yeah. Well, again, like when you talk about Trent Alexander Arnold, I think the new manager is as important as anything in that. No, it's interesting. I do find it right now. I find like the kind of club football hard to, you know, plug into too much. It feels like it's like somebody like Mourinho kind of almost, it's too much a reminder of the truth of what, you know, we're dealing with in football. And like, we're living in a kind of little fantasy, little bubble. And, but it's interesting the way that it is interesting the way they're going about it. I think, clearly there's going to be a slight change of emphasis there. But again, the big thing there is who controls the dressing room and who takes charge of it. And that's exactly, obviously what the Mourinho's there to do.
Cucurella is the other one that I completely forgot there. So just the other thing, though, I just wanted to ask, actually, in the Mbappe, I suppose the shadow that's hanging over the conversation we just had about Real Madrid, he was obviously brilliant last night in the second half, having done absolutely nothing in the first half. What did you think how France looked in terms of that kind of like boxy front four? I was saying last night, like, their kind of four players are all sort of the same, but at the same time, you couldn't be necessarily leaving any of them out. But Elise, as the game went on, especially, kind of looked like he's going to be a like really big player this World Cup.
Well, the big change seems to be in the second half, they switched Dembele and Elise, and Elise came into the middle.
Mm.
And that was the huge difference, because you then had, he was coming, you know, he was playing off, like, sort of right center and coming in and playing those passes that he played, you know, those lethal passes, one for the goal. There was a pass before that as well. And they were destroying Senegal. They really were. Mm. And in that position, he seemed to be able to do something that none of the others could do. And he was the Bayern Elise at that point. So I think that was what was interesting over the, you know, how they evolved over the first from the first 45 minutes, whether other teams would allow them that space, because Senegal definitely, they weren't as disciplined and focused in the second half as they were in the first. But I think that was the key thing, and maybe that's something, because, you know, there are, as you say, like, there's so much talent there. There's so much talent on the bench. And finding the right way of actually using it is the thing they need to do. And I just thought when that change was made, it just immediately, it seemed to bring Mbappe. Mbappe came to life in the second half once he was getting that service as well, which he hadn't been really getting in the first half. And actually, in the first half, the best of, you know, Elise had a couple of things down the right that, you know, he looked good there as well. But when he was in the middle, It changed everything for
the game. Yeah. I thought that first goal, Mbappe will get the headlines for the, you know, the 25-yard into the top corner. I thought that first goal, both Elise and Mbappe's finish was just superb. Like, it was really brilliant. Portugal have just had a goal disallowed for offside. It was a absolutely superb overhead kick from about 10 yards out. I didn't see who it was, Arthur, did you?
No.
It wasn't Ronaldo.
No. It wasn't Ronaldo.
Not Ronaldo.
No. I don't know if he could get up that high anymore, although still, I'm sure, a very good vertical leap on him. Thomas Partey.
Yeah, so Ghana will be without midfielder Thomas Partey in their Group L opener against Panama in Toronto at midnight. The former Arsenal player was denied entry to Canada for failing to declare rape charges brought against him in the UK. He lost his appeal against the decision today. Partey has pleaded not guilty to 7 charges of rape and 1 count of sexual assault last September and is due to stand trial next year.
Okay. Just turn to rugby then. So we're going to have Matt Williams on later this hour, and it's a recorded conversation that Matt's not very happy with me or the Irish media or anybody else for talking down the URC final.
Uh-huh.
Although I would say I'm not talking down the URC final, but anyway.
Are you going, Ian? You go along?
I won't go, no.
No, okay. No.
But the squad is in.
I don't have any money. I already have to go to Turles on Saturday.
That's just the quarter final, isn't it?
I'm going to go ahead with the squad news. I'm trying. The squad for Leinster's URC final this Friday against the Bulls was announced this afternoon. Captain Caelan Doris is back, with Tadhg Furlong also making a return to the squad. And then James Lowe, who was recently confirmed that he will depart Leinster this summer, is in the starting 15. And it's Jerry Carr replacing the injured Andrew Porter, and Leo Cullen has praised his persistence and perseverance.
If you think back to after round 4, our very next game was round 5 and Jerry's playing against Zebra. So, but to see his progression through the season has been amazing. And it's a great sort of story of persistence, perseverance, isn't it? Like, because he was in the system, and, you know, then he's sort of not falling out of the system, because, listen, he's back playing with club, battling out at AEL with a few different teams, Belvedere, Trinity and Lansdowne. So he's moving around to try and progress himself all the time. So to see him progress with us during the course of the season, he's had some huge moments for us, some huge games. But if you think about it, as I said, like the last time we were here, like it only just brings me back to round five Zebra, where we had, what, six debutants that day in round five, which is a bizarre number, isn't it, mid-season, in a round five game to have six debutants. And Jerry and Alex Uslov is probably the other one as well that day. But to see the rise of both of those guys over the course of the season is a testament to those guys, first and foremost. And I don't think anyone thinks they're going to let the team down tomorrow, or sorry, Friday, because they're bloody great characters.
Yeah, it's the strength and depth of Leinster, really. Jerry Carr is off to Connacht in the summer, so it's interesting that he's been picked for this game. They obviously haven't been picking Frawley in the last few weeks, but without Andrew Porter, it's obviously a sign of reinforcements being needed. So, yeah, interesting. James Lowe's last game, we're hearing over 30,000 tickets sold. Be interesting to see if that picks up over the next kind of day, because like it's the conversation that I was having with Matt wasn't necessarily diminishing the idea of the URC final, but the fact is there's just not as the interest there. It hasn't been, you know, to the fore in how the sporting weekend coming up has been talked about. I'd say I've heard more about the US Open than the rugby, and you add to that the fact that it's like the busiest, craziest GEA weekend that I can nearly ever remember in both codes, and we've got the World Cup. Yeah. You know, it's the URC final, big and all as it is just falling behind that in a lot of interest levels.
Yeah, I think that's as it always is, though, isn't it? When Leinster are involved, like it always strikes me as a bit like the GA leagues. It's like winning it won't define your year. It's a nice little addendum, but it won't. I know it's strange the way it goes. Obviously, it's after Champions Cup, but it does. I think that probably harms it even more.
Yeah, well, it'd be a tough game this week because like the Bulls are in their fourth final in 5 years. They haven't won one yet. You think by the law of big numbers, even such a good team will get over the line at some stage. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. More rugby news. We've got an Ireland squad for the summer.
We do. So Ireland head coach Andy Farrell has named a squad for the upcoming games in the inaugural Nations Championship Southern Hemisphere Series. Munster out half Jack Crowley misses out due to injury, while uncapped Connacht trio of Billy Bowen, Sam Illo and Sean Jansen all make the squad. The series kicks off in July with tests against Australia, Japan and New Zealand.
Yeah, there is pity about Crowley, to be honest. And there's a couple more. Obviously, Porter is missing and Ryan Baird as well. But it is a fairly full-strength team, which I think we'll talk to Matt as well about, because questions over a long, long season and a World Cup year ahead. Onto the hurling now.
Yep, so there's an update on Dublin. So Conor Burke has provided a positive injury update ahead of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship quarter-final between Clare and Dublin on Saturday. Speaking to Off the Ball's Rachel Sheehan today, Burke confirmed a clean bill of health and also spoke about the influence of Liam Rush's return.
Liam Rush coming back into the panel this year brings so much experience with him, and you almost got a sense of calm over the defence that first day he was introduced, struggled a little bit with injury. What's it like having him coming back into the panel?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. Rushy is, I think he made his debut in 2009, so not far off 20 years ago at this stage. I'd have only been 11 at that stage. So yeah, he's been unreal. He obviously has so much experience at this level, and as a person is a real leader figure, and he pairs that well with obviously being an unbelievable player as well. So his performances have kind of backed that up, and he's one of Dublin's greatest ever. So when you have somebody like that in your dressing room, you want to welcome them in, and it's great to have him back.
And injury wise, he's doing okay at the moment?
Yeah, doing okay. He did come off injured in the Leinster final, so he's putting the shoulder to wheel and hopefully be back for the weekend.
Just in terms of any other injury updates, how's the rest of the squad feeling?
Yeah, I was just saying that inside. Like, thankfully, actually, yeah, some of the lads have reacted quite well to the injuries that we've had the last 2 weeks. So hopefully have a full bill of health for the weekend.
That's really good news for Dublin, because they look like the walking wounded by the end of the Leinster final. I think they ran out of subs at one point because so many lads went off injured. So really good news. We'll talk to Richie Hogan after 8 o'clock. And just before we finish up then, Eve, we have the tee times for the US Open.
We do. So Rory McIlroy has been grouped with his Ryder Cup teammates Tommy Fleetwood and Ludvig Åberg ahead of the first for the first round of the US Open. The Masters champion is among the early starters and will tee off his first round tomorrow at 12:52 Irish time. And then Porter Carrington will play with Cameron Smith and amateur Miles Russell, while 2010 winner Graham McDowell starts at the same time as that group, which is 12:19. And then Shane Lowry will begin his round before 7 p.m. alongside Joaquin Neiman and Alex Smalley.
Okay, great stuff, Eve. Thanks a million for that, and thanks to Arthur. Dion, you're staying with us for the football show, so yeah, enjoy the last few minutes of Portugal and DR Congo, and we'll be in for England Croatia, which we haven't actually talked about yet.
No, so, we can get into that.
We'll dig into England's bow in the tournament.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.